Families without dishwashers had healthier children.
Are we making our lives so clean, so sterile, that we're actually hurting our bodies?
I saw something from Sweden on that. If you kill everything, you're just going to promote allergic disease and eczema and asthma.
That was my excuse for being a terrible dishwasher.
Welcome to The Genius of Wellness, a podcast brought to you by Hopkins Medical Group, serving patients in Greater Boston with a personalized approach to healthcare. Learn more at thegeniusofwellness.org. I'm Ted Canova. Bacteria gets a bad rap. The word itself seems dirty, but the truth is our bodies need bacteria, the good kind, to stay healthy. Dr. Pat Hopkins leads a unique medical practice in Greater Boston. Together with Dr. Steve Roberts and functional nurse nutritionist Leslie Frodema, the team at Hopkins Medical Group provides an integrated approach to better health. Pat, I've been reading a lot of literature that you've been sending me on today's topic, and I can't help but think that there is a habitat growing in our bodies.
There's a habitat, there's many planets. When you think about it, we're vibrating off of an entire evolutionary event that involved bacteria allowing us to become human. It's explosive in my mind what that means for us.
When you say the word bacteria, I think most people think that that's a bad thing, but our bodies are full of trillions of microbes, of bacteria, and other things that are actually doing good in our bodies.
I always say they're the support staff. You know, if you want to consider yourself a conductor, you need an orchestra. And in that orchestra, you're just hoping the violins relate to the string section, to the horns, to the drums. And how are you going to coordinate that? Well, you need a script, right? You need your the music, the notes are translated. And that's the complexity I start to think of. This is how each cell lives. The cell connects to each cell. The cells tells your body to be something, a liver, a kidney, your arms, your skin. And what's tying it all together, that communication piece, is bacteria and viruses.
What happens when that habitat either becomes overgrown or just bad things start to occur in the habitat?
It's what we call dysbiosis. There isn't anyone listening that wouldn't say, I've had some dysbiosis.
Let's bring in Dr. Steve right now. Dysbiosis is the word of the day. What does it conjure up in your mind?
It first brings me to thinking about the health of someone's gut. I know that there's healthy bacteria in there, and that when you take antibiotics, you potentially kind of shift the balance of the good and the bad bacteria, and it can potentially cause some problems. I have four older sisters, and you know, I think anyone who has a lot of women in their life, they're very aware of the fact that if people take antibiotics for something, that they might wind up with a yeast infection, and that's a form of dysbiosis as well. So it's not just bacteria and viruses, it's also fungus and parasites. It's really all living organisms and how we all live on and depend on and interact with each other.
We need to also focus on what's going on outside our bodies in the world. And Leslie, what does it mean to you when you see things happening in the world, environmental, whether it's water, air, food, and the correlation that you see with your patients with dysbiosis?
We're in a sense living in a toxic soup. We're exposed to so many things in our environment on a daily basis that can actually affect the balance, the microbial balance in our body. So we know, for example, that pesticides and herbicides, as we ingest those as part of our food supply, that has a very direct effect on the health of the bacteria within our bodies, within our gut. So that's one area that we often ask people about and promote the use of organic gardening or organic farming and eating organic foods as a way to try to minimize your exposure to toxins like that. There's also, unfortunately, exposure to heavy metals, and not even just lead. Like most people think, well, we don't have lead in our paint anymore, therefore we're not exposed to any heavy metals, but we are exposed to arsenic. Arsenic is still used in feedlots, so you can get arsenic through eating chicken. You can get arsenic through eating rice. We're exposed to things like cadmium. We're exposed to lead. We're exposed to mercury. And so we still, over our period of our life, as we're exposed to these different things, some people are better at detoxifying them than others. And as we accumulate these in our body as we, especially as we age, they can have an effect on things such as the health of our body overall and the health of our gut.
You say that some people have a better propensity of detoxifying their own bodies. Are those people doing something special, or is it just the makeup of different bodies that there's a different degree of detoxifying?
Both. You can do genetic tests now to help determine if you're a better detoxifier than another person by looking at your certain pathways in the body and seeing if you're genetically predispositioned to be able to use those detoxification pathways better than another person. So yes, definitely part of it is genetic, but part of it's also how you maintain your health on a daily basis. We know that, you know, the body naturally detoxifies and cleans itself all the time. It's doing it every second of the day that we're alive. But over time, things can build up. And through using food, good nutrition, we know foods that are high in sulfur help fuel a very important pathway in the body that uses sulfur to detoxify.
And that kind of food is what?
Cruciferous vegetables, things like cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, kale, foods that are high in sulfur help us naturally detoxify.
If that's what they should be buying and eating, me, what should they be avoiding?
We know high amounts of sugar feed less beneficial bacteria. So the more you avoid high sugar foods, processed foods, which are inflammatory, processed foods, which have many additives that your body may not even be equipped to handle or detoxify. So eating a more natural, predominantly plant-based diet is really the best way at a high level to try to ensure you have the nutrients you need to fuel your detoxification pathways and give you adequate nutrition.
Well, you talk about sugar. Pat, you just blew me away telling me what's in an ice cream cone, for crying out loud.
Well, everything can be a threat. I think that's the hardest part, is navigating, you know, when you said to me, okay, what should I do?
And that's exactly how I said it, right?
Tell me what aisle to go down. So we know that, okay, if you just shop the rim of the grocery store, well, that's has a certain advantage. But the fault line there is you don't know where the food is coming from. So you're now further apart from the nutritional source.
You had talked about spinach was going to be the vegetable that was going to make us all healthy. But now?
Well, we still consider it a superfood, but the superfood, if it's in a plastic container and it was transported for 7 days, has lost, again, 90% of its redeeming quality. That's tough to take. That's why I tell people everyone should get a small garden and give themselves a few months of the year where they can actually source their vegetables and know where it came from and really, you know, support the CSA, you know, the community.
Supported agriculture.
Supported agriculture.
Farmers markets.
Farmers markets. You know, make sure you're there, you get there, and hey, 3 or 4 months of the year, you're optimizing your intake.
Steve, we plant a garden, we go to the farmer's market, and all of a sudden the habitat in our stomachs and our bodies is perfect?
Well, I don't know about perfect. Unfortunately, with the way things are in our current environment, even in, you know, optimal conditions, we're all getting exposed to some of these pesticides that are out there now that have really actually damaged our environments. We're certainly in a damage control setting where we really just need to make do with the best we can at this point. What's growing in your local environment and in season is probably the best and healthiest thing to do. Now, you also do want to take steps, though, to know that they're not doing things that are going to further damage the soil and give you a bigger dose of some of these things that will actually destroy the microbes in the soil, because the microbes in the soil are actually creating the nutrient in the food, and the plants rely on them to actually help make some of these nutrients. And so if you're going to eat something that's been grown in soil that's been depleted for microbes, it's probably not going to be as nutritious for you either.
When we talked about having an episode on dysbiosis, the last thing I thought was that we would be focusing so much on pesticides. Is this the biggest correlation of things going wrong in the habitat of our bodies?
I don't think it's the biggest correlation, but it's certainly on the top 5 list. I think there are a lot of other things that are also contributing to dysbiosis in our digestive systems, overuse of antibiotics, which comes in both in terms of our food as well as just taking that prescription when you don't really need it. Another source would be stress. We know that high levels of cortisol, a hormone secreted by your adrenal glands in response to stress, have a negative effect on the lining of the gut and affect the overall health of the gut. And here we live in a society where we are constantly faced with stress, whether it's driving through traffic or in our jobs or home life. So many people have very high levels of stress that, along with the pesticides, along with the heavy metals, along with all maybe too many antibiotics over time, create a perfect storm that leaves us with dysbiosis. And there's other factors as well, other medications, the overuse of drugs that block acid in the stomach. Mother Nature puts stomach acid in the stomach for a reason. It helps us digest protein, it helps us absorb minerals, but it also helps us to keep the less beneficial bacteria in check.
I found this one of the most fascinating presentations a couple of years ago at the American College of Rheumatology. And one of the professors, GI professors at Tufts, you know, he gave this great talk on throwing the baby out with the bathwater. He said, we threw the good bugs out with the cholera. So when we went to clean water and the Clean Water Act, and we cleaned up the water, we got rid of too many things. And so they're actually taking the outer coats of worms and parasites to put those in pill form so we can reinitiate into our gut diversity that we would have learned if we had been drinking dirty water. Remember when you were a kid? I mean, we used to go out. What would you do? You'd put your mouth under the faucet, right?
Oh, no, the hose.
Right. You grab the hose. We didn't have a water bottle. You didn't have clean water.
And when you drank water from the hose, there was this metallic taste in it.
Oh, I love that.
Are you now saying that was healthy?
Probably.
Because what? That it had the right amount of what? Bacterial nutrients?
It probably had the right amount of rubber in it.
I think some of the older thinking was that our bodies are mostly sterile, at least in different spaces in our body, like amniotic fluid we used to always think was sterile. We used to think that our brains didn't have bacteria in them.
Well, we thought that the goal was to have a sterile body.
I think that totally is betraying bacteria and fungus and all these microbes of actually what are the good things that they do for us. And we actually have a lot to be grateful to them for, because bacteria and fungus and viruses, they've all needed to learn for, you know, hundreds of millions of years how to actually live and grow together, such that funguses and molds, they secrete things that actually will stop bacteria from growing, and bacteria do the same to funguses. And in fact, this is how we learned about penicillin in the first place. And they've done this to a point where they can live in balance, and they've done this with our bodies as well. And we actually know that funguses and bacteria, they actually will make some substances that will actually help stop cancers from growing. And what we've learned is that people who get multiple rounds of antibiotics, more than 5 rounds of antibiotics in their life, are potentially at higher risk of developing certain types of cancer. We know that they've been looking at breast tissue and that there are healthy bacteria that are supposed to be in the tissue of our breasts. And that if we shift the microbiome such that the healthy bacteria aren't there as much and a different type of bacteria, methylobacterium, come in, you're actually at a higher risk of getting a breast cancer. And I would suspect we're going to find the same thing is true of the brain as well. We've actually only just recently learned that gut bacteria finds its way into the brain, whether it's through a retrograde pathway through neurons, through the vagus nerve, I'm not sure. But we know that there's actually bacteria that are supposed to be in what we thought was the sterile environment of the brain. And I wouldn't be surprised that we'll find that in Alzheimer's brains and patients with brains with dementia, that they likely have a more sterilized environment.
Hi, it's Ted taking a second to remind you that the Genius of Wellness is your place for interesting podcasts, tips for healthy living, and doctors who provide a personalized approach to healthcare. You can find it all, plus schedule an appointment at thegeniusofwellness.org. Now back to our conversation.
Leslie, it would seem that we have this core fear of not knowing what's going on in our body, that something's growing. And it seems that maybe we've overreacted to try to have a sterile interior versus allowing everything to be more natural.
Yes, and I think it's impossible to have a sterile interior, and nor do you want it. A couple years ago, I was at a presentation by a microbiologist at the University of Chicago. And he put up on the screen a picture of Pigpen with his dusty haze all around him. And his point was, this is what we really look like. We have a microbial cloud that literally surrounds us. And the bacteria in our mouth and on our skin are all feeding into this cloud. And it's as unique as our own footprint, fingerprint, I should say.
But it seems that we have become so fixated on this, and maybe it's through marketing, that we need to have no germs, so nothing's growing inside, almost to the point that we're making ourselves crazy and fanatics for cleanliness.
And it's not necessary, nor is it really beneficial, I think, for your health in the long run. Better to have this image of ourselves living in unison with a whole community of trillions of different bacteria that are there to help serve us and protect us. And as Steve says, help us prevent getting certain diseases, help us digest our food, help us stay at our ideal body weight, help us not get diabetes, help us do all these things. So we should be thinking about how we can nurture the microbial environment that is an integral part of us. Even though we can't necessarily see it, it does communicate to us through symptoms. When we have gas, when we have belching, when we have reflux, when we get skin rashes, that is our body speaking to us. And at the root of a lot of that is working on our digestion and making sure our gut is in really good health. And I'm continually amazed when I talk to patients. I will say to them, well, tell me about your digestion. And they'll say, oh, my digestion's very good. And I'll say, well, what does that mean? Do you move your bowels every day? Oh, you know, every third day. Do you have bloating? Well, just, you know, once or twice a day. Well, I thought you said your digestion was good. We don't have a common definition anymore for what healthy digestion is, because I think so many people's digestion is not healthy and they've just come to accept, well, that's what normal is.
Well, we don't talk about digestion with other people,
do we? We do here.
No, but out there, we really don't talk about digestion, but then we're shocked when someone gets a bug. We're shocked when somebody gets food poisoning.
What was interesting, we were traveling, we were going to Machu Picchu, and one of the members of our group takes omeprazole every day. Well, that person was the only one that got Turista. You know, Turista is the E. coli that's indigenous to another country, Mexico, Montezuma's Revenge. You know, when you go to these other countries, you're exposed. Well, what happens when you're on drugs that block your normal acid gradient through your stomach? You change the entire gut biome, and so you can't handle something new coming in. You can't handle the parasite. You can't handle malaria. If you had a robust immune system, you might be able to handle it. So, you know, when you were saying what's happened over the past 20, 30, I think it's 50, 60 years, refrigeration. Your grandparents did not have refrigeration.
So they shopped daily at a local market.
And we fermented our food. So that was a normal feeding the gut biome. I mean, you don't grow potatoes in the same spot. They even figured that out in Ireland. They did have a famine. They figured out that we had to move things around, that there was diversity in the soil. We had to take advantage of it and replenish the soil. And the same thing for our gut biome.
It's hard for the consumer to take all of this in and make it so personal that their gut and their digestive system is affected by all of this.
There's probably a sense of helplessness. That is a really challenging thing to kind of figure out where to start. And I think it really does begin with kind of making your own personal relationship stronger, both with people and with land and with the earth, and actually understanding what's going on within your body itself.
Stephen, that sounds daunting, but Leslie, you always come through with some positives in these dire moments.
I want our patients to know that there is a lot that is under their control, even though these factors are stacked against us and they might seem daunting. We really want our patients to leave here feeling inspired, that there is a lot that is under their control, and that we will walk with you step by step to help you rebuild your microbiome and rebuild your health. Because we don't want an office visit here to be a source of stress for you. We want you to feel like you're empowered to really take steps to improve your health. As Michael Pollan says, you get 3 votes a day with your fork. You can choose what you eat and you can choose where you spend your money. And so as much as possible, support the local farms. have a little, as Dr. Hopkins says, have a little farm in your own backyard, whether it just be a pot of soil where you're growing some herbs. Herbs are incredibly powerful healers, whether it just be on your kitchen window. Every day, think about how you can take a step. Save up and buy a good water filter for your kitchen.
My goal when I go food shopping is, can I leave without anything in a container? It's a challenge, it's a step, but it's a moment you take and you move towards that.
We've been scapegoating the bacteria and blaming bacteria for how many of the health problems for the last 50 years or last 70 years since we've actually come to understand more germ theory, and actually now we have an antibiotic to do something against it. So what have we done? Warfare against all bacteria everywhere we can.
And is some of that marketing? Because you watch TV and it could be anything from making sure your kitchen is sparkling clean to your bathroom, to your hands, to your face.
Well, I always say if dirt was bad, dogs would be dead.
Yeah.
There's a lot of healthy dogs in my neighborhood. So if you watch a dog make its way down the street, it's nothing clean about what they're doing. And certainly when we were young, and then it evolved when we were having our children, sterilizing the bottles, sterilizing the nipples, sterilizing everything, because you didn't want a bacteria that would take your kid down. So keeping everything, and that just seemed to accelerate to, I mean, we talked about washing hands, and then they realized soap was actually better than the chemical. So let's go back to soap. Let's talk about sterilizing countertops. We'll make it plastic because you can wash it and scrub it. And then they found out that, in fact, the wood grain cutting board was more sterile. The right bacteria lived in the wood, that the bad bacteria lived on the plastic. So everything we learned, we've had to unlearn. You know, should we walk down the hall smacking our hands against a plastic dispenser and getting, I don't know what, gel on my hands and calling myself sterile?
Wait, that doesn't work?
I don't do it. That's the wrong generation. I walk in the room and I still use soap and water. I can't use the gel. My hands feel worse. Plus it dries out your
skin. Yeah, I actually got a dermatitis from it in the hospital. It's terrible.
Yeah, I don't know what it's supposed to, but I actually heard it shifted your bacteria on your skin, that you're actually in a worse state using that gel all the time.
We have started to see a little bit of a sea change in that there are products in the home now that are not designed to sterilize every surface in the home. I've actually seen some probiotics for the house that you can aerosolize, and they actually might help stop mold from growing in areas by actually putting down some bacteria in your house.
That's interesting. They also did that study with families without dishwashers had healthier children.
Yeah, I saw something from Sweden on that.
Yeah.
Again, it goes
yeah.
to that hygiene hypothesis.
Right.
Type thinking of, if you kill everything, you're just going to promote allergic disease and eczema and asthma.
That was my excuse for being a terrible dishwasher.
You know, you guys have literally humanized this issue, and I'm going to look at bacteria a whole new way. I'm going to support either pig pen, as Leslie says, or a dirty dog or a dirty hose that we drink water out of. Guys, thanks for another great conversation.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to The Genius of Wellness. If you like our podcast, do us a favor. Share it with your friends and family and write a review on this podcast channel. It'll help more people find us. The Genius of Wellness is brought to you by Hopkins Medical Group, serving patients in Greater Boston with a personalized approach to healthcare. Learn more at thegeniusofwellness.org. I'm Ted Canova. See you next time.